They are not about life. They're not addressing gun violence. It's all a farce because their feelings are hurt because the white male patriarchy is coming to an end.
So we're told that it's all about the babies, protecting the babies. And by the way, I like to protect the babies. I love the babies. I had several babies myself. Well, not myself, but they are my babies. It's all about protecting the mother. It's all about looking out for God. It's all about... Stop. 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 Nobody believes you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 296. My name is Melvin. I'm your gracious host. And I want to thank you so much for being here. So there's no doubt you've heard about what happened in Alabama. And you heard about what happened in Georgia. And I think most of you know. This was always the name of the game. The Supreme Court, you know, local courts, local governorships. This, for a lot of the Republican voters, this was what they ultimately wanted. Now, remember, the first thing that the GOP generally does whenever they get power is they make themselves and all of their white friends very, very rich. But that kind of stuff isn't going to keep them in office. So they do the culture war thing. And that's what's happening right now. And so there's five hardcore right-wingers on the court right now. Five hardcore right-wingers. Guys that just can't stand women. And so the pro-life people, which is an insane name. They shouldn't get to call themselves that. The pro-life people, or I suppose the pro you're being born and then they don't give an S about you people, see this as the time when the good Lord is going to come back. Because the good Lord did send us Donald Trump. And now we get to control women's bodies. So it's about life. If it's really about life, let me give you this headline. Quoting here, Alabama executes a murderer a day after banning abortion. So is it okay to kill a killer? And if it's really about life, if you're really concerned about life, even killing a killer, is that not wrong? Well, Melvin, come on. Anybody could make the case for killing a killer. Well, I can't. I don't think that does any good. I mean, if you kill a killer, are you any better? I mean, have you not just become the thing that you hated, or the thing that you were trying to deter, the thing that you were trying to stop? So maybe I could lose the argument on the whole killing a killer thing. They say it's about children. Okay, all right. So it's about children. All right. Well, pro-lifers, or pro-birth people, whatever you're called, if you're concerned about the children being killed, then certainly you're concerned about all children. Because after all, we are all God's children. No?
Today, a 16-year-old Guatemalan boy passed away in U.S. custody, the fifth migrant child to die since December. U.S. Customs and Border Patrol said he was, quote, found unresponsive this morning during a welfare check, but that the cause of death is not known at this time. This, as the Trump administration identifies 1,700 more migrant children it may have separated from their families at the southern border. That is in addition to the thousands we already know were separated under the administration's zero-tolerance policy. And that number could grow even more. That's because the administration has 35,000 more files on children that they need to go through, all to determine whether they, too, were separated at the border.
I consume a fair amount of right-wing media, as I've said probably 5,000 times on this microphone. And let me tell you where this story registers with conservatives. It's not even a concern. Hannity ain't talking about it. Limbaugh ain't talking about it. Laura Ingraham, as much as she likes to laugh at dead brown people, she's not talking about it. This isn't even a thing. It's not on the radar. But wait a minute. It's a dead child. Aren't y'all concerned? Well, and then, of course, the president gets to play it both ways. You know, he didn't do this. This was Obama that did this. But actually, he's going to take credit for doing this, even though he didn't really do this. Disneyland.
I'm the one that stopped it. President Obama had child separation. Now, I'll tell you something. Once you don't have it, that's why you see many more people coming. They're coming like it's a picnic, because let's go to Disneyland. President Obama separated children. They had child separation. I was the one that changed it.
After this bill passed, it took no time for me to hear from folks that go, hey, God, this bill is extreme. This bill is definitely extreme. Man, it's so extreme, even Pat Robertson's against it. Even Pat Robertson is against it? Let me tell you, first of all, what they're talking about.
I think Alabama has gone too far. They've passed a law that would give a 99-year prison sentence to people who can commit abortion. There's no exception for rape or incest. It's an extreme law, and they want to challenge Roe versus Wade. But my humble view is that this is not the case we want to bring to the Supreme Court, because I think this one will lose.
They say, look, Melvin, is this not great news? Is this not great news? Yeah, it's so extreme that even Pat Robertson's against it. You don't, forgive me, ladies and gentlemen. So peg the end of the clip right there. It said, this is not the case that we want to take to the Supreme Court, because this went too far. And what he's effectively saying is, in an election year, which we're coming up on pretty quickly, we're already in the election season, the Supreme Court is not going to give hard right conservatives what they want during an election year, because they would like the court to be 9-0 conservative. So they would very much like Donald Trump to stay in office for another 4 years while they kill off the four liberal justices. So he's not against this law. He just says it goes too far for it to go in front of the Supreme Court during an election year. And may I remind you, we do not want Pat Robertson on our side. This guy has said a lot of crazy things, like the gays are the reason why God made 9/11 happen. This is real. I could run down his list of crazy, but it's only a 1 hour show, so I'm going to move on. But he said it's too much time to give a doctor 99 years and to not have exception for the life of the... Stop. That's not what he means. He's just as anti-abortion, anti-woman as all of the rest of them. And he's not good people. So the headline from the Independent Media Institute, an article by Tom Hartman, the Republican Party is on the road to mass lockups for women who have miscarriages. So the public discussion that has always been had around this is, if you're going to make it illegal, then how are you going to deal with the women that still go through with it? And Republicans have always danced around this question. They don't want to say lock them up, although they're perfectly happy to say it now. And why? Something changed. During the 2016 election, when Trump sat down with Chris Matthews, Trump said, yeah, we got to lock up the women. This was a thing. And it's the first time that it's ever really been said that explicitly. And when he got elected, the whole GOP, the Susan B. Anthony, the white power, they went, whoa, we get to say this now? Because he said it. And he got elected. And he was accused of rape. And he got elected. And he was super racist. And he got elected. So this threw the door open for all of these things. Quoting here, during Mike Pence's first year as governor of Indiana, his state put a young woman in prison for having a miscarriage, alleging that she had taken an abortion-causing drug, an abortifacient. Purvi Patel didn't have a trace of the drug in her system, but Pence's state sentenced her to 20 years in prison anyway. Just a few years earlier, Indiana also held Bebe Shui,
for 435 days in a brutal maximum security prison called Marion County Prison, facing 45 years to life for trying to kill herself and in the process causing the death of her 33-week-old fetus. Utah charged a 28-year-old Melissa Ann Rowland with murder because she refused a C-section, preferring vaginal birth for her twins, and one of them died. 16-year-old Rennie Gibbs was charged by the state of Mississippi with depraved heart murder when her baby was born dead because his umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck, something that happens with some frequency. Her crime was that she had cocaine in her bloodstream, according to prosecutors. Angela Carter was ordered to have a C-section to deliver her baby before she died of cancer. Both she and the baby died from the procedure. These cases have exploded in recent years as the GOP and the nation's law enforcement system have embraced the American Christian version of fundamentalist Islamic law, which dictates that women are the property of men and their principal purpose for existence is reproduction. According to Duke University's Journal of Health, Politics, Policy, and Law, there were 413 documented and probably thousands of lesser known cases of women being prosecuted for having miscarriages or attempting abortions between the time Roe v. Wade became law of the land and 2005. Between 2005 and 2014, the Guttmacher Institute documented another 380 cases. Georgia just passed a law signed by Republican Brian Kemp, the man who ran his own election against Stacey Abrams, which puts any woman in that state who has a miscarriage at risk of 30 years in prison or even the death penalty. Other states are in line, and in those states, like Georgia, with the death penalty, many are proposing legislation to put women who have abortions to death. And we know what happens when abortion is totally banned. Romania, which up with a population slightly smaller than Florida, banned abortion. Although unlike Obama, they allowed a provision for rape and incest and congenital abnormalities in 1966. While wealthy Romanian women were still able to get abortions by traveling to nearby locations, that option was not available to poorer women, and at least 10,000 women have died of botched illegal abortions. That's the official number. The real number, however, is probably 10 times that. And that's effectively what it's going to mean here. It's not going to stop abortion. It's just going to severely limit abortion for people who are not rich. Rich white women will still be able to go anywhere, anytime, and get an abortion, even in the state of Georgia, even in the state of Alabama. This, just like any other law, only pertains to those of us who do not come from great means. Here's the other thing. This is probably a terrible, 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 terrible time to pick this fight. If the concern is abortion, the first step should be reducing them, trying to find a way to reduce them, find out why there are abortions, work to reduce them. Abortions have been reduced in recent years. From a high, maybe 20 years ago, of over 10,000 to less than 3,000, you know, in any one of these states. I mean, the number of abortions have dropped. So why are they picking this fight right now? Well, because it has nothing to do with life, nothing to do with the sanctity of life, nothing to do with religion. It has everything, 100%, to the idea that men are entitled to women's bodies and women are only here for procreation, and you're here to create men, other men who will then tell you what to do. It has everything to do with controlling women's bodies and nothing, and I mean nothing, to do with life.
We need to call this what it is: a nationwide assault on women's constitutional rights by ideological extremists who have no right to be making these most intimate and personal decisions a woman or a family can make.
So I found this article over on popular.info. The headline, these six corporations are financing the war on women in six states. Now, I understand that by boycotting these companies, you won't necessarily change their behavior because the amount of money that we have is no match to the amount of money that, say, oh, I don't know, politicians have. But we can certainly try. And if you hear a name on this list and you do business with this company, I'm pretty sure that they would like to hear from you. So these six corporations are financing the war on women. Let's start with AT&T. And you can find this at popular.info because it gives it a more detailed account than I'm going to give right here. I'm just going to give you an overview. According to AT&T's corporate website, the company makes sure women at AT&T feel supported in everything that they do. We have many incredibly talented female leaders at all levels and in all businesses across our company. Equality at AT&T will remain my top priority. That, according to Corey Anthony, the company's chief diversity officer. AT&T, however, has donated nearly $200,000 to politicians that advocated for and enacted abortion bans in six states. To Governor Mike Parson from Missouri, House Speaker Elijah Haar from Missouri, and it goes on. $113,000 to the governor, Kate Ivey, the one who just signed the anti-abortion bill. Let's move on. Walmart. Yeah, I should have saw this one coming. Walmart says it's committed to celebrating, developing, and lifting up women around the world, both within the company and in the communities that we serve. However, the company has donated at least $57,000 to politicians that advocated for and enacted abortions in six states and run down the list. Brian Kemp, Mike Parson, Nathaniel Ledbetter. Moving on. Pfizer. $53,650 across six states. Pfizer touts its commitment to gender equality, including access to health care. Investments in women's health and gender equality must be prioritized to help create healthier communities worldwide, not just on International Women's Day, but every day. By harnessing our collective efforts to press forward for gender equality, we can make a difference in the lives of the women who need it most. But the company has given $53,650 to politicians that advocated for and enacted abortion bans in six states. Moving on. Eli Lilly says it is working to remove any hidden barriers for women and minorities to pave the way for a more open, engaging, and inclusive culture for anybody. But the company's donated at least $66,250 to politicians that advocated for and enacted abortion bans in five states, including $30,000 to Governor Kate Ivey. Moving on. Oh, getting thirsty. I could sure use a Coke or not, because Coca-Cola has given $40,000 across five states to politicians that advocated for and enacted abortion bans. So Coca-Cola says there's overwhelming evidence that achieving equality and empowerment for women has both immediate impacts that benefit them directly and broader ripple effects that are good for society. But here's a bunch of money for all these anti-women politicians. Aetna, $26,000 across four states. They tout their commitment to women and its reliance on women as customers. Women influence 80% of purchasing decisions, they say. They are the largest consumer and workforce groups. Women's views on healthcare and healthcare services are critical to our success, the company says. So here's a whole bunch of money for all these anti-abortion politicians. The information in this letter should be easy for anyone to obtain, but it is not. States make it difficult to uncover corporate contributions to politicians, and each state has its own system, and few of them are user-friendly. Some of that came to us courtesy of the Supreme Court, where it's become almost impossible to get this information. So shout out to the good people at the info site.
Seems to be a moment where people are recognizing that there's a lot of Americans who are pro-life. Are you more optimistic than you've ever been?
Oh, definitely.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. This is the time.
A lot of hope. You know, honestly, for me, when I voted, I cast my ballot for Donald Trump and he became president.
Polls show majority of Americans are for the right for a woman to choose. What do you say to them?
Polls lie.
That's not what we found at all.
Hey, that's not what I want to hear. So therefore, that's not true. That thing hey, polls lie. Because polls don't tell me if a poll doesn't tell me what I want to hear, I tell you what, if Donald Trump went to 50, 60, or 70% approval rating tomorrow, these women from the Susan B. Anthony, it's an anti-woman group. Well, they call themselves a pro-life group, but we know better. If Donald Trump went to a 70% approval rating tomorrow, I tell you, they would have it tattooed on their foreheads about how goddamn great he is. And Jesus picked him. And look at his approval rating, because that kind of poll would be okay for them. But instead, he's somewhere between 30 and 40%. And people who don't want Roe to be touched is over 70%. But it's nice, isn't it? To just go ahead and believe whatever you want to believe and not believe what you don't want to believe. Think about that. If you go to the doctor and the doctor says, I'm sorry to tell you, you have cancer. You have cancer and you have 6 months to live. You can go, I don't want to believe that. And you won't. And if you die in 6 months, it's the doctor's fault. But there's ways. There's ways to fight back. Little ways, large ways. Of course, the large way would be, please get out and vote. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about some smaller ways. So the headline here, Travis Scott pledges to donate Alabama merchandise profits to Planned Parenthood. Travis Scott, I don't know how hip y'all are. Travis Scott's a rapper. It's not one of my faves, but I definitely use his music. Quoting here, Travis Scott has voiced his support for those fighting against Alabama's new abortion law. The rapper headlined the Hangout Music Festival in Gulf Shores, Alabama, where he announced at the concert he would donate all merchandise profits from the festival to go to Planned Parenthood. A fan captured a video of the announcement during the concert. He says, we feel for those in Alabama. I love y'all and I just want you to know that love is the strongest feeling that we can have. The rapper also dedicated a song to the women of Alabama. He's only one of a number of celebrities who have spoken out against the law. Talk show Busy Phillips asked women to share their abortion stories using the hashtag YouKnowMe. And several actresses, including Amber Tamblyn and Minka Kelly, have shared their experiences. Others, such as Ellen DeGeneres, Lady Gaga, Reese Witherspoon, and Ava DuVernay, have also tweeted their solidarity with the women in the states where restrictive abortion laws have been passed. There is also the much, much, much larger issue of, do you like this? Are you okay with this? Is this just fine with you? If, say, somebody you know in Alabama gets raped by their dad, because remember, it doesn't count for incest or rape. And if I'm not mistaken, Alabama is one of those states where your rapist can sue you for parental rights. So they're just winning all kinds of ways out there. You going to be okay with this? Is it okay that this is happening? If you are not one of these wackadoodles from the Susan B. Anthony group, but you are a woman, how do you feel about this? My position on abortion, and I don't print it on t-shirts, has always been this. If you are a man, you can shut the hell up. Because you're never, ever, ever going to have an abortion. And if you don't want one of your girlfriends or your mistresses or your wife to have an abortion, you two need to have that discussion between you two before you engage in the banging. But once you do, and this is where it gets mad complicated, you got to discuss this stuff before. I understand it's not sexy talk, right? It isn't like, what you going to do with your fingers? What you going to do with your tongue? It isn't that kind of it isn't that kind of stuff. It sucks. It's like, do you got any diseases? Okay, papers, please. what if you get pregnant? What are we going to do? You need to have that discussion beforehand. But otherwise, unless it's somebody you're intimate with, shut the hell up. It's none of your business. But what if you're a woman? Do you as a woman get to tell all other women what to do? Well, as a woman, you are obviously entitled to your own opinion on this because you too could be party to an abortion one day or have to face that decision. And if you do not like abortion, then you should not have an abortion. And if you do not think that other women should have abortions, you know where I'm going with this. Shut the hell up. Stay in your business. Stay in your lane. You don't get to tell other people what to do. Hey, I don't care if you voted for Donald Trump. You still don't get to tell other people what to do. It ain't right. Your mama should have told you that. Your mama didn't tell you that. Your mama ain't much then.
Understand unconscious bias. What I would say is there is outright nasty sexism and misogyny. You know, because all during 2016 online, there were people who say, well, you know, I sure would vote for a woman, just not that woman. And now all of a sudden, some of those women they said they would support, they're running, and oh, I'm not voting for that woman.
There is no such thing as someone else's war. If there is a war going on, whether we are directly affected by it at the time or not, we will eventually be affected by it. The war that the LGBT community has been having for really ever, and of course, more effectively and more aggressively since Stonewall, which we are coming up on 50 years as of this year now. Eventually, the war will come home. The idea that we can send people overseas and it's them fighting and dying and who cares and you're unaffected. The war will come home. The idea that we can have a war on women and it just affects those women. And you know what? I'm a guy and I got a vasectomy and I ain't got to worry about it no more. I'm a woman. I got my tubes tied and I believe in Jesus or whatever your dumb thing is. And I don't got to worry about it. No, there is no such thing as someone else's war. And with that said, nobody should have to fight any war alone. And when God's army has decided that they are not going to come and help us, well, then I guess we're just going to have to turn to good old Satan. So Satan to the rescue, quoting here from U.S. News and World Report. This is a real story. The Satanic Temple is suing Missouri over abortion rights, and they could win. On its face, it sounds like the epitome of frivolous, if not blasphemous, a lawsuit. A group of Satanists in Missouri have sued the state over the strict anti-abortion laws on religious discrimination grounds. A state trial court agreed, sort of, dismissing the case not long after it was filed in 2015. But skepticism about the Satanic Temple suit against Governor Eric Grittens, a Republican, and Show Me State administrators ended when the Satanists appealed. The state Supreme Court has now agreed to take the case, and based on the arguments presented in the court, experts say that the Satanists could actually win. If they prevail in the case, an organization named for the Dark Lord of the Underworld could upend a 2016 law requiring women to wait 72 hours before an abortion, forcing doctors to give women ultrasounds of the fetus and offering them to take literature declaring that life begins at conception. So, okay. So here's the way it goes. The Wingnuts pass an anti-abortion law saying that abortion offends my religion, it ruins my religious freedom. And then the Satanists come forward and the Satanists say, hi, having a ban on abortion or making women wait 72 hours or shoving wands up their vaginas, that is offensive to our religion as Satanists. And I, this radio host here, I'm not a Satanist, but I have studied Satanism, and I have to say, yeah, actually, that's exactly what's in their books. I've read everything, cover to cover. Though it's written by Anton LaVey. His writings are fascinating. You don't have to join the religion, but his writings are definitely fascinating. And yeah, this is what their religion is about. Now, the Church of Satan does not believe in Satan. And they do not consider themselves a religion. And if it's in their books, and if any of these wingnuts did their homework, like say they picked up one of these books about Satan, picked up something written about the Church of Satan, picked up something that was written by Anton LaVey, they could very easily go into the court with that. Just highlight that inside the official handbook for the Church of Satan. And they could say, Judge, it says right here that the Church of Satan does not consider themselves a religion. They consider themselves an idea. And the case with that could be thrown out. Now, I'm not going to call anybody in Alabama or Georgia or any of these states and tell them that. But that's there. So why do people think that the Church of Satan is a religion? Well, because your Abrahamic religion has told you that Satan is real, Satan exists, and that Satan is out to get you, and that there is a religion where people believe in Satan. No, they're effectively libertarians. They just believe in all kinds of freedom. But hey, Godspeed to the Satanists.
You also spent a fair amount of time talking about your faith.
Yes.
Why?
Well, it's important to me. And I think it's also important that we stop seeing religion used as a kind of cudgel, as if God belonged to a political party. And if he did, I can't imagine it would be the one that sent the current president into the White House. I mean, you know, what we see is so different than what I hear in scripture when I'm in church. I hear about taking care of the marginalized and defending the weak and supporting the poor and visiting the prisoner and welcoming the stranger. These are the things, and humility and decency, right? These are the things that are taught in Sunday schools around this country. And so the idea that is the property of the Republican Party, especially this Republican Party and some of the choices that they've made in recent years, it just doesn't add up to me.
Since this is such a popular idea, not just among Democrats, not just among independents, but also among Republicans, all of the Democrats are now pushing out their platforms on abortion. This idea that none of us wanted to touch, that we all just stayed away from, ain't touching it with a 10-foot pole, they're all releasing now. And Elizabeth just jumped out ahead. She was first. So this from Vox. Elizabeth Warren just announced her abortion platform, and it's aggressive. A federal law to parallel Roe v. Wade. So the problem with Roe is that it is a Supreme Court decision. And Supreme Court decisions, or any court's decisions, can effectively be overturned. I'm glad that we've had Roe, but if I had my druthers, we wouldn't have had Roe. We would have simply had it passed by Congress, where it would be way harder to overturn or to get rid of. But instead, we got the Roe decision. So she says, hey, polling data shows that 71% of Americans oppose overturning Roe, including 52% of Republicans. So she says, just write a law that runs parallel to Roe, and that's what we should have. No more of the Roe decision. A ban on targeted regulation on abortion providers. These are the trap laws. The trap laws require that the clinics that perform the abortions have admitting privileges, but they serve absolutely zero medical purpose. It's just an overregulation to kill abortion providers. A guarantee of insurance coverage for abortion and birth control. And here's where it gets really, really aggressive. So conservatives have said for some time, they pass a bill every damn year about how we shouldn't be giving money to pay for abortions. Okay, we have a thing called the Hyde Amendment, and we've had it since 67 or 66, somewhere in that neighborhood. And the Hyde Amendment says you can't spend federal dollars on abortion. So we have spent zero federal dollars on abortion since then. But the Republicans push this lie out every year that all this money is going to abortion and that you as a taxpayer are paying for it. And so she says, you know what, let's just get rid of the Hyde Amendment. Yeah. And allow federal programs like Medicaid to pay for abortion care. She also calls for the passage of the Each Woman Act, which would ban abortion restrictions in private insurance. Boom. And a repeal of the Trump administration's domestic gag rule. The Trump administration in March released a rule barring groups to provide or refer patients for abortions from receiving funding under Title 10, which provides family planning funds aimed at low-income Americans. The rule would strip funding from Planned Parenthood, which currently serves about 41% of patients who get services under Title 10. and reproductive health advocates say will jeopardize low-income Americans' ability to get contraception. The rule has been blocked by the courts for now, but Warren calls for simply getting rid of it. We must undo the current administration's efforts to undermine women's access to reproductive health care, she writes, including ending Trump's gag rule, and fully support the Title X family planning fight.
Some have used other scriptures from the same good book that you just quoted to denigrate your lifestyle, as you know. How do you reconcile?
Well, first of all, my lifestyle until I started running for president was that I work hard, I come home at the end of the day, feed the dogs, my spouse and I watch a little TV, we go to bed, we get up the next morning and start over again. But if somebody has a problem with my sexual orientation, they have a problem with how I was made.
Did I just hear you say Mayor Pete wants kids very soon?
Yeah, I don't know exactly when and how we're going to pull that off, but Chasten is made to be a dad, and I'm looking forward to it, too, as soon as we can figure it out.
I think it's cute. I think it's cute that they want kids, and that's about the only reason I just played that clip right there. So before I go into the next segment, I want to play one more clip for you. If you are really concerned about women, and I know you're not, if you're one of these anti-abortion nuts, if you're one of these Susan B. Anthony women, if you're one of these Trump supporters, you don't really care about women. But the idea that men are entitled to women's bodies is not just here in the States. It's really anywhere we have these deeply conservative religious laws that tell men that they are entitled. And when men feel entitled to women's bodies, that's how we end up with things like locker talk. Don't do locker talk. That's how we end up with groping. That's how we end up with a rapist as a president. And so, with very, very few options, I found a story about women who are now turning to an app because the groping in their country is so out of control.
Women in crowded trains and other public places in Japan often face sexual harassment, but are typically too afraid to seek help due to a sense of embarrassment. With the Digi app, victims can press a rebel groper icon to produce a written message saying, "There is a groper here, please help." With another press, the message turns red and a voice repeatedly says, "Please stop." The app also includes an alarm and can notify a designated email address when used, a feature that can also be used by children and their parents. Users can also locate crime-prone areas and police stations on a map.
Nobody fights a war alone. And the groping app, or the anti-groping app for rebel gropers, that kind of thing should not exist. And let us end where we began. If you're a man, stay out of the abortion debate. You have no right. If you're a woman, just don't get one. And for those of us across all gender spectrum that are decent people, let's stand with our women. Knock this stupid stuff off, shall we?
Work because guess what? Donald Trump kept saying, "Drink my Coke. This is better than new Coke. Drink it. It's the best thing you've ever had. You drink this, it will make you a better person. It will save America." And then you drink the Coke, and you find out there's raccoon pee in it. You can't step back from that.
Joe.
Good morning, America.
Yeah. I suppose the question that I'm going to begin this segment with is, are you done drinking Coke that has raccoon pee in it? So, morning, Joe. It's super strange to me that he has a show, because of all the people on that show, I know he's a former member of Congress, so you would think he'd have a little more, But of all the people on that show, he tends to have the least to say. And when I listen in, and it's generally never more than 15, 20 minutes a day, if I catch any of it. And I was listening in the morning, and he's always trying to find ways to dump on Trump because Trump said terrible things about him, said terrible things about his wife. But the raccoon pee thing, and I go, okay. All right. Actually, that's pretty funny. If you are indeed sick of drinking raccoon pee, I just want to let you know that there is a better option. So I talked a lot in the last segment about an issue that I really feel like isn't all that political. Yeah, it's the Republican states that are pushing it, and it's all Republican politicians that are pushing it. But I don't think that those people really reflect what their people want. So, an example, this article from Business Insider by Eliza Relman and Walt Hickey, the headline: the vast majority of Republicans support AOC and Bernie Sanders' plan to cap credit card interest rates at 15%. So let me tell you the way this goes. The banks borrow money from the feds, and they borrow it like 0.5%, 0.25%, you know, maybe 0.5%. Not much than maybe 2%. So if you have a personal investment, what's a pretty good turn on investment? You know, 4%, 5%, 8%. 8%, that's crazy. You're getting 8% back? Wow, that's nutso. You know, if you got your own personal investment, say you've got a 401k or you've got an IRA, I mean, what kind of a return are you seeing? You know, your percent generally in the single digits. Compound interest, and then, of course, putting in your own money over time tend to make that grow quite a bit. But otherwise, you're not seeing 100%, 200%, 300%, 1,000% on your return. But you know who does see those kinds of returns are the banks. Because when they borrow money at super cheap rates, sometimes rates that are so cheap, it's not even a whole point. Then they turn to you and they say, your credit card rate is 29.99. Hold up. It's not just that. And I know, because as a business, I take credit cards. So I pay at the low end, a 2.5%. So whenever people run a credit card, they don't give me a check, they don't give me cash, they run a credit card, I pay 2.5%. Now that's pretty good, because there used to be a time where you had to own or rent a credit card kiosk. You have to pay to own that or pay to rent that. And then you have to pay like 3% or 4% or whatever is the business. It was hard times. But because of the ubiquitousness of smartphones, we 2.5%. But that's not the only money that they collect. Okay, that's what they're charging to me just to process this. Then they charge you on the other end. Now, if you pay your credit cards off every month, and almost nobody does. And by the way, the people that do pay them off every month, the credit cards have a name for you: deadbeat. If you pay your credit cards in full every month, deadbeat. I'm like a super duper times 10 deadbeat. What does that mean? The minute I charge something to my credit card, I go into the bill payer app in my bank app, and I pay it that second. And within 2 days, the bank has their money. So there's never, I don't just not run a balance. I get zero balance credit card bills every month, even though I charge thousands of dollars to credit cards. So I'm like a super duper deadbeat to these guys. But if you run a balance, and most Americans do, the money that they're borrowing to back your purchases that they're getting at super duper cheap rates, they're charging 10 times more, 20 times more, sometimes 30 times more or better. Who the hell are you, and why do you get a 3,000% return on the money that you make? So Bernie Sanders and AOC have said, you know what, you don't get to do that. They have a plan, and the title of the plan is the Loan Shark Prevention Act. And they want to cap rates at 15%. Nearly 70% of Republican primary voters and 73% of Democratic primary voters said that they either supported or strongly supported the proposal according to a new insider poll. Yeah, so they're not taking away their ability to make buttloads of money. They just don't think that they should be making. Now, the average credit card rate is about 21%. But for most credit cards that I carry, when I read the terms of service, it says 28, 29. I mean, that's generally the number I see. But I'm reading here in the story. It says the average is around 21.36%. They would like to drop it to 15%. So for you and I, as I've mentioned this whole episode, no one fights a war alone. So I, as someone who pays off my credit card bills all the time and way ahead of time, I won't see a benefit from this, but other people will. And for other people, it will put more money back in their pocket. More money back in their pocket means more money that they get to spend in the economy because it's not going to some rich white guy at the head of a bank. Even though I'm not going to personally benefit from this, I would like to see this enacted into law. No one fights a war alone, and I am for my fellow soldiers getting this discount. And everyone supports this. Oh, 3/4 on both Republicans and Democrats support this. Wait a minute. I can hear it. The Republicans screaming socialism, right? Right? They say that Bernie's a socialist. AOC is a socialist. Ah, well, guess what? You want your credit card rates dropped so that they can only make maybe 20 times more on you or 30 times more on you rather than 40 or 50 or better? Well, guess what? Guess what? You're now a socialist. Go on with your bad self, GOP. I'll give you a minute to wash that socialism off yourself. Go ahead and pause the show right now. Go take you a shower. Wash that socialism off yourself.
He stated he was bringing manufacturing back in the state of Pennsylvania. He has, in 2.5 years, he has brought zero manufacturing back in this area. He's only brought low-income warehousing into this area.
Once again, if you want it, the Republicans do not want you to have it. They do not care. You do not get to have it. And if you hate something, then that means they love it. If it hurts you, then it helps them. They like it. See, this promise to these factories, he's going to bring all these factories, going to bring back coal because, yay, let's all work in a coal mine. Bring back the dirty fingernails jobs, the factory, bring them all back. And, of course, he didn't bring them back. He doesn't even know what he's doing. In an infrastructure meeting this week, he decided to snarl and stomp out like a child and then went to a microphone with these pre-made signs about how much he hates the Mueller investigation. Oh, yeah, this happened. This is your president, children. And then he barked at the media about how damn transparent he is and how he should stop being investigated. You got nothing to hide, then what are you doing? They don't care what you want. And if you don't want it, that means that you're going to get it. Case in point, robocalls. I am not the only one. I get a dozen of these things a day. Scammers. They want to sell me health insurance. They want to give me a better Google rating or something stupid like that. Every damn day. I'm sick of them. I'm with T-Mobile, so I know that the overwhelming majority of them are being blocked. And about half the ones that get through, the phone will tell me, oh, yeah, this is probably a scam. We're letting this one through, but it might be a scam. And I'm pretty sure when I hang up within 2 seconds, they go, yeah, all right, that was a scam. And then that number goes into a database where they go, you know what, let's just block this one altogether. I'm not the only one getting these calls. I know you're getting these calls. Everyone's getting these calls. But for the Republicans, this is real. This from Gizmodo, the FCC commissioner, repeat after me. Robocall is not a bad word. What is the absolute quoting here? What is the absolute easiest way to unify America today? Go anti-robocall, because everyone hates them. Not exactly a brave or controversial stance to condemn the most annoying phenomena of our time, is it? The English language has few verboten words. Lately, it seems to be robocalls creeping up in the rankings along the words taxes and moist. I like the word moist. The numbers of robocalls grew an estimated 325% in 2018 to 85 billion spam calls, 26.3 billion of which were in America. The FCC itself recently cited a study saying half of all calls made on cell phones this year will be spam. Hold up. Half of all calls this year will be spam calls. Calls that nobody wants. But wait, hold on, not so fast, says Republican FCC Commissioner Michael O'Reilly. Repeat after me, O'Reilly said this past Thursday, robocall is not a bad word. He spoke to an audience of debt collectors at an ACA International. Debt collectors are one of the country's most zealous users of robocalls, a tool that they deploy to hound people in debt about their bills. So it doesn't matter what you want. Not when it comes to healthcare, not when it comes to the economy, not when it comes to jobs, not even when it comes to robocalls. If you hate it and you want it gone, then that means the Republicans are for it.
In fact, we use code names so personal feelings never come into it.
Oh, yeah. What's President Trump's code name?
It used to be Putin's little bitch. Now it's Stormy's little bitch.
What about Ivanka's code name?
Girlfriend.
Jared Kushner?
Other girlfriend.
Don Jr. and Eric?
Two Fredos.
What about my code name?
Dead Man Walking.
Look, I don't have to take this from you. I have rights.
Now you listen to me, you little weasel. I don't know what rights you think you have. You broke the law. And now we're going to catch all of you little fuckers.
That was Robert De Niro and Ben Stiller playing Robert Mueller and Michael Cohen. And when you criticize Trump these days, whether famous or not famous, his army, his horde of racist nincompoops, people who can't even read a lot of the time, will hammer you with hate. And they tell you, If you star in a skit where you're a critical of Trump, we ain't watching you no more. We ain't coming to your movies no more. If you don't, you know, and it goes on like that. You know, they've got this idea that conservatives are the only people in the world that buy anything ever anymore. And you may remember, it's about a year ago, Stephanie Wilkinson, owner of the Red Hen restaurant, asked Sarah Sanders to leave. That's when the horde of Trump supporters just lost their effing minds. So she wrote an article. Since a year has passed, titled, I Own the Red Hen Restaurant That Asked Sarah Sanders to Leave. And I just want to tell you, resistance is not futile. Hello, intolerant, quoting here, intolerant, intellectually challenged, psychotic socialist. Your so-called business is in jeopardy. Rest assured that this is not a threat, but simply a warning that predicts your downfall. When your treasonous, hypocrite, lowlife Obama took our nation into despair for 8 years, we didn't do or say any of the things that you do. Get over it before it's too late. By the way, there are a lot more of us than there are of you. I've been getting hate mail for almost a year now, ever since I asked Sarah Sanders to leave my Lexington, Virginia restaurant, the Red Hen, last June. At the time, the country was in turmoil over the Trump administration's heinous practice of separating children from their parents at the southern border. In our tiny 26-seat restaurant, the horror felt simultaneously immediate and far away. Faced with the prospect of serving a fine meal to a person whose actions in the service of our country, we felt violated our basic standards of humanity. We balked, and we just couldn't do it. I took Miss Sanders aside and politely suggested she leave. She agreed, equally politely. She may or may not have expected that this day would come, but she never showed any sign of outrage or even much surprise. We had drawn a line and she had accepted it. I'm pretty sure both of us thought that that was the end of the matter. But when I woke the next morning, social media was on fire. The incident had gone from a Facebook post to a tag tweet to a nationally trending news story with the whoosh of lighter fluid to flame. The blowback was swift and aggressive. Within 24 hours, the restaurant's phone line was hacked. My staff and I were doxxed, and threats of our lives, families, and property were pouring in every available channel. Protesters colonized the streets around the restaurant. Thousands of fake Yelp reviews torpedoed our ratings. And dozens of people attempted to lock up our tables with reservations they had no intention of honoring. Pundits lamented the prospect of red restaurants and blue restaurants. In less than 3 days, President Trump mocked us on Twitter. In the days following, I tried to balance fears for the safety of my family and staff against the reality of being well protected in a small, loving community. Overhanging it all was a scent that I'd seen this show before. Don't we all have ringside seats to the outrage circus these days? But there was plenty I couldn't predict or assess. How likely was it really that the guy texting me from a Minneapolis area code was going to come to town and set fire to our restaurant? But she points out it's impossible for me to know. When the mail started pouring in, things got weirder for the first few days. The rubber banded bundles fit into my letter carrier's shoulder bag, but soon he was forced to have large white plastic totes overflowing with letters and packages to my door. Staring at it all made my stomach clench. It's one thing to set filters on your email or set your privacy settings on Instagram and block callers on your phone. It's a whole different feeling to face a mountain of mail dwarfing your living room sofa, not knowing which contain abuse or which appreciation. See, the realness of that mail struck me. Paper's correspondents carry all the genuine marks of humans who feel strongly enough about the whole event that they take all those little tasks of letter writing, tracking down paper and card, composing their thoughts, handwriting or printing it out, locating our address, and then getting it in the mail. In more than 4,000 painstakingly typed letters, hastily scrawled on postcards and feces-smeared notebook pages, I was branded a racist and a hypocrite, a victim of Trump derangement syndrome. I was an idiot or worse, and a lousy manager. Sure, I'd 86th Sanders, but it was my business that was going down the drain. Yet, as I kept opening the letters, I saw a pattern. For every hateful message, there was one of gratitude. For every angry accusation that our actions were driven by the inability to accept Hillary Clinton's 2016 loss, there was a whole note of thanks from someone lamenting Trump's rollback of protections for marginalized people. What's more, for every wish that our business die a painful death, there was a dollar bill or a generous check or an order for a gift certificate. When we opened, after a 10-day hiatus, our dining room was full. In the following weeks, people who had never been to the Shenandoah Valley traveled out of their way to eat with us. Hundreds of orders for our Red Hen spice blend poured in, and the love spread far beyond our door as supporters sent thousands of dollars in donations of honor to our local food pantry, our domestic violence shelters, and our first responders. After a year, I'm happy to say business is still good, better than good, actually. And besides the boost to our area charities, our town's hospitality and sales revenue has gone up as well. Our haters may have believed that there were more of them than us, but it turns out we have more than enough to keep us cooking. And to everybody who might be fearful about taking a stand, I say, don't be. Resistance is not futile for your business. Just think that's a fabulous way to end. It's not futile, and there are not more of the racist nitwits than there are of us. There are more good people. Think about some of the things that we discussed today, whether it be these women's issues, where Republicans seem to be solidly with Democrats, whether it be credit card rates, where Republicans seem to be solidly with Democrats. I think that there are more things that bring us together than separate us, as long as we don't continue allowing ourselves to be separated. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TFYCPO. You can listen on the go. Just download from iTunes or from Podbean. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. Feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. Thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I've woke you up, good morning.